Opposition mounts to President Trump's immigration ban. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9, and make sure to catch our podcast on iTunes or through the WJCT app. You can also listen to the show live right now on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. Just ahead, we've got local reaction and we want your calls as protests erupt around the country to the president's travel ban. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, it's this month's First Coast Success as Karen Bruni Mathis welcomes Native Son founder Aaron Gottlieb. Plus, Culpepper with his prediction for Super Bowl 51. All of that and more ahead. But first this hour, confusion and protests at airports around the country this weekend after President Trump issued an executive order Friday banning travel to the U.S. from 7 Muslim-majority countries. The sweeping order shut the border to refugees as well, some of whom had been waiting years to travel and some of whom were already in the air. This caused global chaos and intense criticism around the world. Trump's Democratic opponents in Washington this morning are calling the situation a constitutional crisis because Customs and Border Patrol officials have apparently, in some cases, defied a federal court order to allow detainees access to legal counsel. This morning, we have the latest on the situation and how it's played out here in Florida as well. Here in studio, we welcome Travis Trice and Michelle Klo of Jacksonville's World Relief Agency. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning.
Also in studio, Ashgar Syed. He serves on the Florida Board of Emerge USA. That's an organization advocating for Muslim, South Asian, and Arab American communities. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
And Erica Curran is here. She's an immigration attorney with Florida Coastal School of Law.
Good morning.
Thanks, everyone, for being here. And here's our question to callers. What is your reaction to President Trump's executive order banning travel from 7 Muslim-majority countries to this country? We want your calls. You can also weigh in on the First Coast Connect Facebook page. Audio is streaming live there this morning for the first time. And the number to join us is 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet the show, weigh in on our Facebook page, too. We'll try to get as many of your comments on the air as we can. And there's so much to get into, from the status of refugees to how Muslims around the world are reacting. We'll go to the panel on all of those questions in just a moment. But first, Erica Curran, you are an immigration attorney with Florida Coastal. Do you agree with some Democratic senators who have stormed into their districts or their state's airports and are calling this situation this morning a constitutional crisis?
Yes, definitely. I think the due process rights of those individuals being held in the facilities have been violated, and they should have access to counsel as well as, they've already been boarded the planes and they're already in the United States.
Several federal judges issued stays to this order, but there is confusion about exactly who is being impacted this morning, in particular green card holders, legal residents of this country. Can you bring us up to date on what we know, and in particular, if you have any information about what's going on at Florida airports?
Yes, so the American Immigration Lawyers Association yesterday rallied at the Miami airports and also Orlando and Tampa, as well as some individuals were detained at Cape Canaveral at the ports as well. And attorneys were available to provide assistance to those individuals.
Okay. And the number to join us with your thoughts about this story is 549-2937. Ashgar Syed, you're with Emerge USA. President Trump and his team say that they believe this order is simply what they campaigned on. They believe it's going well, and they insist this is not a Muslim ban. Your thoughts?
I think President Trump campaigned on really three major promises. One was to build a wall. The other was to go through with mass deportations. And the third was to ban Muslims. They're stating today that they don't intend to ban Muslims and that this executive order doesn't ban Muslims. But frankly, we have no guarantees of that. They've said that they want to. And this very clearly seems like the first step in that process.
So you don't agree with the Trump administration's assertion that this is simply a way to protect the border from nations that their research shows sponsors terrorism. At the same time, critics of the seven countries that are affected point out that none of the people from the countries now banned were part of, for example, the September 11th attacks. Saudi Arabia was. It's not under the ban. That's one example of the criticism.
Right. So the Cato Institute, a conservative think tank, has come out and stated quite clearly that exactly zero deadly terror attacks have been committed by any person from any of the seven named countries. They've also pointed out that the likelihood at any given year of an individual being killed in a terror attack in the United States by a refugee is one in 3.64 billion per year. So just to put that in context, it's 10 times less likely than your name getting pulled out of a hat that includes the names of every single United States citizen.
We'll go to your calls on President Trump's travel ban. We want your thoughts and questions for this panel of experts looking at the legal ramifications, the status of refugees, and more. It's 549-2937. Right now, though, let's talk about the refugees. Travis Trice, Michelle Klo, both with World Relief here in Jacksonville, a refugee resettlement agency. We saw incredibly emotional scenes on the news over the weekend of people who'd been detained at airports, who were finally allowed through, reuniting with their families. Some of these folks were refugees who had been waiting years to travel. Let's talk about the refugee part of this and, mm-hmm. And what you can tell us about refugees that might have been impacted traveling here to Florida.
Yeah, well, we're looking at, of course, a 120-day moratorium on refugee arrivals across the board. That means every country that we resettle refugees from. I'd also like to point out, not a lot of people are talking about this, but there's a cap as well. We're going from 110 to 50. And that's a pretty significant number when you think of how every U.S. resettlement agency is budgeted and staffed and prepared for 110, because that was
110,000
arrivals to the United States.
Per year. Okay.
Yeah, and it's important to note the fiscal year for ORR, that's the Office of Refugee Resettlement, it actually begins in October and ends in September. So at this point in our fiscal year, we have already resettled half of that number. So in essence, after the moratorium is lifted, we're looking at a resettlement number of, around or less than 25,000 nationally for that, and that's across every single resettlement agency. So the point being that once this is lifted, you're going to see just a crippling of the infrastructure of these nonprofits, because they were budgeted and staffed for a much larger arrival number.
Okay. Michelle Klo, also with World Relief.
So this week we had three arrivals we were planning for, setting up apartments, making plans to get volunteers to greet them and befriend them. One family has already canceled, and we were notified.
From what country?
They were coming from Eritrea.
Okay.
And we have two other arrivals planned, single Iraqis who were interpreters for our armed forces. And we were notified this morning from our home office that they would not be coming. Now, this puts them at particular risk. They served our armed forces as translators. And in their country, if it's known that they did that, their life is at risk.
We saw those tales reported over the weekend in multiple platforms, Erica Curran, people who had served the U.S. Army in Iraq and had risked their lives are now affected by this travel ban. And a moment ago, you talked about the legal status of these detainees. There are still an unknown number of people being detained in airports around the country. As of Saturday night, over 100 people. We still don't have a handle on how many people are being detained right now. What is the legal process going forward for some of these detainees, the ones that are in this country but are not being released?
So attorneys are filing habeas corpus petitions to try to get them released, as well as stays of removal. Many of them, they would prevail on their visa cases if they were allowed into the country and processed in court, because they have not committed any of the violations of our grounds of inadmissibility, which are the rules that determine who can come into the United States. And so all of these national security rules are already in place. These individuals have already been screened and vetted in numerous interviews and processes, years sometimes, the refugees and many of these visa holders. So, the habeas corpus petitions to release them from custody as well as stays of removal to prevent their removal, to give them time to prove their cases if they are placed in removal proceedings.
And Ashgar Syed, what will Emerge USA be doing to weigh in on this situation that we see unfolding?
Certainly. So one of the things that's really interesting that we haven't touched on yet is the Republican lawmaker outcry against this executive order. Senator John McCain and Lindsey Graham released a statement that I think really hits it on the nose. They said, we should not stop green card holders from returning to the country that they call home. We should not stop those who have served as interpreters for our military and diplomats from seeking refuge in a country they risked their lives to help, and so on. The Emerge USA is going to be launching a campaign, a 100-day campaign, where we're going to sit down with Republican and Democratic lawmakers around the country and talk to them about Muslim issues.
All right. Lots of calls as we talk about President Trump's executive order that banned travel to this country over the weekend from 7 Muslim-majority countries, sparking protests at airports and chaos and confusion about how this is being implemented. We want your calls. It's going to be a little time to get through all of the calls. Lots of people waiting. But let's begin with Jonathan in Mandarin. Hi, Jonathan. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Melissa. It's Rabbi Jonathan Lubliner. How are you?
Oh, good. Good to talk to you, Rabbi Lubliner.
And it's wonderful to hear Travis and Michelle on the phone, with whom I've had the great pleasure and privilege of working with refugee families.
That's right. Your congregation works with them. So what are your thoughts?
My thoughts this morning is that this does nothing to increase security for Americans. It is. I understand its popular aspect, but it is its grandstanding. And the fact is, those who know about what it takes as a refugee to be classified as such, and to go through the grueling, and thorough vetting process. There is extreme vetting. It takes years for a refugee to arrive here. And refugees from certain countries are even more scrutinized. And they are truly the huddle, the poor masses yearning to breathe free, right? Which is also part of our values as Americans. It's on the pedestal of the Statue of Liberty. So it seems like this is the most vulnerable population. It is also the most scrutinized population before they arrive in the United States. And knowing something from having observed this process over 6 years, working with both Muslim and Christian families, as a rabbi of a synagogue, I have to tell you that I don't see how this adds one iota to our security.
All right, that's Rabbi Jonathan Lubliner on the line from Mandarin. Thank you for that call. You know, Michelle Kloh of World Relief, it's been really striking to see the way Jewish temples around the country, having had the horrific experience of trying to flee the Holocaust, their ancestors have worked really hard to take in refugees from Muslim-majority countries. And then there was additional controversy as the president signed this executive order on Holocaust Remembrance Day. So there are a lot of moving parts to what's going on here in terms of the reaction it's sparking.
It is, and we appreciate, Rabbi, your phone call, and we appreciate your partnership with World Relief and our families. He and his 12th graders take families and befriend them. And it is beautiful to see the Jewish center embrace Christians, embrace Muslims, embrace people of no faith, because they know what it's like to be a refugee, to not be wanted, to be an outcast. And they have just loved these families and helped these the children.
Travis, explain quickly, if you could, the vetting process for refugee families you work with, because for those that are responding favorably to President Trump's order, they don't feel the process is stringent enough, and they see this as, you know, decisive action on,
sure,
on a
yeah.
national security issue.
Yeah, and you know, if we were having attacks from refugees, perpetrated by refugees, that was killing Americans, I mean, we'd be having a different conversation right now, but there's not data that shows that. And what we get a lot of times is a lot of people that will speak into the subject and not really completely know the vetting process itself. They won't know really even the difference between a refugee and an immigrant. So number one, I just encourage everyone, you know, don't get all your knowledge just from this very short time on the radio. Go online, do some research, go to good sources, and really understand the process. But the number one thing I would say about the difference between Europe and the United States is their vetting process is completely different than ours, just starting with the geographical location of where refugees are coming from and where they're going. We do our vetting overseas as a country. No one comes to the United States without being completely screened by the UNHCR.
UN High Commission on Refugees.
That's correct. I'm sorry. There's a lot of acronyms in this. The United Nations does their first round of screening. That can take years alone. And then they will refer their application to some of the countries that do accept refugees. The United States is pretty unique in that we do our vetting overseas. The State Department sends teams over the ocean to go do the vetting, which once again can take many more years. I've heard a lot of this 18 to 24 months, and yes, while that is a minimum number, we have refugees that have waited 20 plus years. We had a gentleman that here in Jacksonville, 32 years, waited to come to the United States. The average, I believe, is somewhere between 14 and 17 years for refugees. We hear a lot about the Middle East, but we've also got refugees in camps in Kenya, Uganda, Ethiopia, Thailand. We're talking about 63 million displaced people.
Ashkar.
What's striking to me, Melissa, is that this law appears to be making us less safe. As Senator Ben Sasse, Republican from Nebraska, said, if we signal to the Middle East that the U.S. sees all Muslims as jihadis, the terrorist recruiters win.
Lots of comments on Twitter and Facebook. Jessica writes, this is an act of security theater. It doesn't make the U.S. safer from terrorism. Here is an email from Stephanie. It's important to remember these countries of devastation are breeding grounds for terror because of the breakdown of civil society. Not only is accepting refugees an issue of morality, it's a way to give opportunity and purpose to refugees to prevent extremism. We need to let them in. It will make the U.S. safer and better. Let's go now to Autumn in Ortega. Hi, Autumn. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to make a comment that I really agree with the, I'm not sure who said it, but one of your panelists said that this is actually making Americans more at risk because of the ill will that we are breeding in the Middle East in regards to this. And also, I thought there was a law in 1965 that abolished the ability to not grant permission for people to come over based on citizen or based on nationality. So I don't understand how this is legal. And I'd love to hear some ways that the people who live on the First Coast can actually help support the refugees that are here and hopefully the refugees that will eventually be coming. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Autumn. Okay, so two questions from her. Let's start with the legality. Erica Kern, immigration attorney.
Yeah, I think the challenge is that she's referencing the national origin quotas, which were abolished in the 1960s during the civil rights era. However, with this particular ban, they didn't state specific religions. They said they were real careful religious minorities. And it remains to be seen what that means. But I think that's really questionable. And based on the campaign promises where the intent was really clearly stated a Muslim ban, that gives cause to question.
Okay. But will a court of law find that this ban violates the establishment, that there should be no religious litmus test? That is the constitutional question, isn't it?
Yes, and I think it's complicated. I don't know how this will play out. I think that the legal issues are complex, and the Trump administration is very confident that they will prevail.
Okay, and let's talk about quickly those who want to help refugees. They can certainly call World Relief.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. And this this executive order is going to most likely cut staff at World Relief, so there'll be less people at World Relief to help refugees. So if people want in the community to help refugees, they can contact us. We can hook them up. And really, it's just a matter of being a friend and helping them navigate their new life here. And that would be great. They can contact us at 448-0733.
All right. Lots of calls as we go now to Bert in St. Augustine. Hi, Bert. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, go ahead.
Okay, well, I am a supporter of President Trump's ban. I understand the complications involved in it, and it would be turmoil. But it's the first step in securing our borders. And I just think that you would expect there would be disruption, and it was just implemented. And I respect all the people on the panel, but it's kind of a biased report at this stage of the game. I just think that the Quinnipiac poll showed that still the majority of Americans support the ban, and the implementation of it would be a little disruptive at first. But the rabbi is exactly correct. The vetting process is onerous and time-consuming, but that's the legal vetting. What President Trump is trying to prevent is the illegal people that might somehow sneak across the border and or into our country. So I support that. It's just the first step in achieving that goal.
Okay, thanks Bert. Much. That's Bert in St. Augustine. And we have an email from a listener saying much the same. He writes the show, people who came as refugees have committed terrorist acts. The Boston Marathon bombers and the Fort Hood terrorists came as refugees. He writes, first-generation refugees born here like the Pulse terrorist, and we can see the concern of so many. Ashgar Syed.
One of the things that's really upsetting about what's happening and what's happened over the weekend is the number of individuals that had a legal right to be in the United States that were affected by this. And to add to that, it's affected a number of, frankly, American heroes, as we saw with Hamid Khalid Darwish, who was held for about 19 hours and wasn't released until two members of the House of Representatives, Jerry Nadler and Nydia Vasquez, came and sprung him, essentially. This is a man that served our armed forces in Iraq as an interpreter for years. There was two attempts on his life by terrorists in Iraq. Another individual that was kept from the United States was going to be doing a fellowship in cardiology at Harvard University. And the professor that was going to be overseeing his fellowship said, this outstanding young scientist has enormous potential to make contributions that will improve our understanding of heart disease. This is a young man from Iran who could be saving American lives and is actually being kept out of the United States.
Right. Erica Kern, certainly people are being detained that have a lot to offer this country. At the same time, what is your response to the listener who emailed, who pointed out that sometimes first-generation refugees coming to this country, not, by the way, not from any of these seven countries, but from other Muslim-majority countries, have been involved in acts of terrorism?
Well, I think also U.S. citizens have been involved in active terrorism. I mean, these individuals were also naturalized U.S. citizens. But individuals, you know, you can do things on the ground. And I think largely, particularly when you're speaking of the Muslim community, most of the information has come from the Muslim community. And having good relationships has been really essential. Also, just to tie it in locally, many of our universities have students who are trying to come in on student visas from the seven countries or dual nationals. I know we at Florida Coastal have students that are Canadian Syrian or Canadian Iraqi, and how this will impact them as well.
Lots of tweets coming into the show. Here's one. I'm concerned that nothing is being done about domestic terror in this country from white nationalists and the KKK. Josh tweets the show, please mention that Trump surprised his own Department of Homeland Security secretary with this ban. That's General John Kelly. All right, let's take a couple more calls. Omar is in Riverside. Hi, Omar. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. Well, a few, two different comments, really. So, I mean, in regards to the ban, I have a really good friend who's from Jacksonville, Jacksonville Beach native. She's been living in France for about a little over a year, I think. She recently got engaged. She has, you know, they're coming here actually in March to get married. And her husband is a dual nationalist. He's Syrian French with a French passport and visa. So, you know, it's you know, once you hear about it, then you have the outrage personally. But then to see that this morning as I woke up, you know, it definitely kind of brought it home. And to really solidify that, I'm also an American Muslim who was born and raised Muslim. My mother and father converted in the 80s, and I grew up in a very Sunni environment. I grew up, my best friend was Syrian, I had Syrian parents. You know, I grew up with people from all over the world. And it's really kind of discouraging for someone who is American and also, you know, grew up in an Islamic faith to think that, you know, a widespread ban really on people who have, like you said, the legal right to be here is being supported by so many people that, you know, it almost with no regard at all. It's like, well, oh, well, if you can't, you know, matter of fact, I think I saw something that said, you know, it's not a right to be here. You know, it's a privilege. But, what you know, what is privilege? I mean, we're all privileged to be here. And if someone has taken the steps to legally come here, why would we think that preventing a widespread, you know, a mass amount of people is going to prevent a possible terrorist 10 years down the line or after they've been naturalized because their parents came over here 50 years ago? I mean, it just some of the details that people are saying is just really kind of ridiculous, in my opinion. I don't know. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay, Omar. Thanks, Omar. Yeah. One more call, and then we'll wrap up with our panel. Akhil on the West Side. Go ahead, Akhil.
Yeah, hi, Melissa. How are you doing?
Okay.
The comment I wanted to make was that I just wonder, you know, the Women's March and all the other people who are protesting against this ban, how many of them actually voted and actually went and knocked on people's doors during the last election? And also, we've got 2018 coming, and that will be the only time you can actually speak and have anything said so that, you know, your voice can be heard through the ballot box. That's the only way left now for us to actually have a voice. So I just wanted to make people know that, you know, they should be getting ready to vote in 2018, and that voting is the only way you can change any of this.
Thanks for that call. And here's an email from Betsy at Lutheran Social Services. Please remind your listeners there are three resettlement agencies, and we all work together in Jacksonville. Of course, she's right. LSS, Lutheran Social Services, You Guys, World Relief, and Catholic Charities, right, all resettle refugees here in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. So, Michelle, Travis, both of World Relief, you mentioned that in response to this ban, your budget is likely to be cut. I assume that would apply to the other agencies in Jacksonville. Where do you go from here with your work?
Well, we're meeting this afternoon with our leadership team to make that decision. Where do we go from here? And as Betsy pointed out, Lutheran Social Services and Catholic Charities, we work very closely with them. Serving refugees, they will be affected also. So, yes, our budget will be drastically cut. There'll be layoffs. And as I mentioned earlier, we'll need the community to step up to help the refugees that are here. And when they are able to come back in 120 days, we'll need help then also.
Emerge USA, its next steps.
As I mentioned earlier, we're going to be meeting with all of the members of the U.S. House of Representatives, and we're going to be speaking to them about issues that are really important to the Muslim community. These are very trying times for Muslim Americans. In addition to what's seen as an affront from the Trump administration, there was news last night of a terrorist attack on Muslims at a mosque in Quebec City. 7 dead, a number injured. These are very, very trying times for Muslim Americans, and the organization's vision is to champion pluralism in America. And so it's very important for the organization to be standing up for the rights of the LGBTQ community, for the Jewish community. And there's actually a press conference that's going to be happening at the Fort Lauderdale Airport here very soon that Emerge is doing with the Anti-Defamation League. And so we want to stand in solidarity with any number of communities that are being affected by the Trump administration's policies.
And Erica Kern, what can we expect in terms of the legal wrangling that is sure to continue on this matter?
Yeah, I think the fight will continue. We at Florida Coastal, together with Jacksonville Area Legal Aid, this Saturday at noon, we're going to host a legal panel on the issues. And so attorneys, members of the community, everyone is welcome to come this Saturday at noon, because we're looking at things moment by moment. These legal cases are coming forth, unique challenges that we didn't anticipate. And so we'll keep fighting. And our clinic is representing many asylum seekers from these seven countries. And it remains to be seen what will happen to those cases.
Thank you all for being with us as we spoke with Michelle Clough and Travis Trice of Jacksonville's World Relief, Ashgar Syed of Emerge USA, and Erica Curran, immigration attorney with Florida Coastal School of Law. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Much more still ahead on the show later. Some cold cuts as our own Culpepper looks ahead to Super Bowl 51. But up next, First Coast Success drops into the grocery aisle as we speak with Native Sons' Aaron Gottlieb. Back in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
WJCT and Mayo Clinic present an interactive health forum, all you need to know about atrial fibrillation and stroke. Mayo's team of experts will provide tips on identification, treatment, and how their integrated approach is unique. February 2nd at WJCT. Registration at wjct.org/stroke. On February 14th, the full Jacksonville City Council is expected to take up a controversial change to the city's human rights ordinance. Join WJCT for a live, interactive, televised discussion on February 8th as a panel explores the division over the expansion of Jacksonville's human rights ordinance protections for the LGBT community. Log on to wjct.org/events/community-thread to submit your questions or to RSVP to be part of our studio audience on February 8th. Community Thread, LGBT rights on the First Coast.
Welcome back. Well, he is the owner of Jacksonville's thriving Native Son grocery stores. In today's First Coast Success, Karen Bruni Mathis of the Financial News and Daily Record talks with grocery mogul Aaron Gottlieb.
Jacksonville native Aaron Gottlieb launched his visionary business 20 years ago. Before the proliferation of national chains in the industry, Gottlieb and his wife Erica saw the need for a natural and organic food supermarket. They launched Native Son Natural Foods in a small Mandarin location. Since then, they more than doubled the size of that San Jose Boulevard store, opened a Bay Meadows supermarket, and 2 years ago, expanded to Jacksonville Beach. Aaron Gottlieb, welcome to First Coast Success.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
In February 1997, you were a 21-year-old college student and you were engaged to Erica. Why did you decide to open what was then a relatively new concept in Jacksonville, a natural and organic foods market?
Well, it actually started with my family's habits. I grew up with the average American diet. My father worked all day, and so my mother would either make dinner or she would pick dinner up. And quickly, we became a fast food family. And so I had gained quite a bit of weight, and I watched my parents utilize different diets throughout our lives. We were all forced to do them when they did them. And everybody in our house yo-yoed, and I noticed my surrounding family doing the same. So when I got into college, I had peaked at a weight of 220 pounds. And I looked in the mirror one day and said, I need to change my lifestyle. And I gave up dieting. And so based on doing that, I found a job at a natural food store and started looking into a quality of food lifestyle. And at the time, I decided to go vegan, which is consuming no animal products. And just by making that leap, I dropped 80 pounds. Now, I did it in an unconventional way that most people aren't familiar with. I would go to the fast food joints because I didn't know any better, and I'd order a hamburger with no meat and just condiments, and I'd go to any of the Mexican places and get a taco with refried beans, and I was laughed at back then, but I still lost the weight. After looking into the natural food store, my first job was to make the shelves look full. So my job was pulling the product up, and I used to read the labels out of boredom and realized how many people did not know what was in their food. And so when the customers were coming into a very well-known natural food store in the Atlanta area and asked questions, even the owners were giving the best answers they could, but they were not giving them the right information. And I quickly turned around one day at the risk of losing my job and said, hey, you are going to hurt that customer with the information you're giving them. And they said, well, what do you know about the products? And I started spouting off all of the ingredients and the way they would hurt themselves. And they said, how did you learn it? And I said, well, I haven't been facing shelves. I've been memorizing products while I've been facing shelves. And so that's when I knew that I had a different place in the grocery industry than the average person who started off just as a college job to make a little extra income.
How was it accepted in Jacksonville at the time?
You know, in the natural food industry or in the food industry, there's always the masses who are in the middle. There's people who look for unhealthy foods to comfort them, and then there's people who are looking for foods to solve problems. So they existed in the city, and there were small natural food stores serving the community and doing a great job, but there was nobody as a grocer focused on organic ingredients. And so through customer service, we were accepted fairly quickly, and we developed a strong core. And 20 years later, I would tell you the majority of that core still shops at our locations. I see them no matter which of the three stores I go to. But it was a lot of hard work to educate people, listen to their needs, and start teaching them all the different approaches they could to their own diet. You know, our job wasn't to tell people what was right and wrong. It was they'd go to their doctor, find out what was wrong with their health, and then they would come to us to ask what foods we have that could accommodate. So slowly people started building trust, and at the time there was a divide between the medical industry and the natural food stores, and we didn't buy into it. Instead, we were happy to have doctors come in our store, and when they learned we weren't telling people health advice, we were actually sharing with them what their options were based on the health advice. We were quickly embraced by, you know, the Mayo Clinic and quite a few other hospitals in the region who realized that we were not kind of poisoning the well. We were expanding the options.
Since you've opened your stores nationwide, there have been a proliferation of natural food stores or stores that say they're natural and organic food stores, and they're coming into Jacksonville as well. What is your strategy to compete with those national chains?
Well, you know, the first thing you have to do is understand who they are and why they're in business. And so getting to know your competitors is a good thing. And that doesn't always mean that they're your enemy. That it's great to see natural food expanding. So I'm thrilled from a health perspective that people have access to healthier options. What I'm dismayed about is the lack of clarity about what is actually healthy. A lot of the companies getting into the space now are riding the line between having an ingredient deck that is healthy and having a bottom line that they have to please their shareholders. And so the fact that we are privately owned and we can be transparent and we only have one customer to please is a great asset for us. It keeps us nimble. We don't have to talk out of both sides of our mouth. And we know who we are.
That was Karen Bruni Mathis speaking with Native Son owner Aaron Gottlieb. You can read a partial transcript of her talk with him in today's Daily Record. Well, the 26-2 with Donna Marathon, the 10th anniversary of the marathon, actually, is less than a month away. Now, the big event is dedicated to helping women and researchers dealing with breast cancer. Not only that exciting news, there's a breast cancer vaccine trial going on right now at Jacksonville's Mayo Clinic. Here with more, we're pleased to welcome Donna Deegan and Dr. Keith Knutson, an immunologist and breast cancer researcher at Mayo Clinic. I don't normally mess that up so much. Good morning, you guys.
Good morning.
I'm a little embarrassed, but immunologist. Donna, let's start with you. I did not realize It's the 10th anniversary of the marathon.
Can you believe that?
Congratulations.
10 years. Yeah, we're excited. We've got folks coming in from all over the world for this, so we're really excited. Big crowd expected this year and lots going on.
Yeah, okay. And of course, you founded this marathon yourself after successfully dealing with breast cancer as a way to fund research and help women with the disease. And what a track record that has been.
Well, you know, we've been able to help more than 10,000 women at this point. And of course, we're just absolutely thrilled that we've been able to partner with the Mayo Clinic to create the Translational Genomics Program, because what progress. And as you mentioned, you know, one of the things on the way, a really exciting vaccine trial, one of a number of them, actually. So,
Dr. Knutson, can you share with us the latest in the research? This is really exciting news.
Well, you know, the funding from the foundation has, you know, provided a source of developing our innovative programs at Mayo Clinic, and one of these certainly has been the vaccine program that we're working on. We're very much interested in you know, trying to intervene to boost the immune system to protect against cancer. And we have a number of different clinical trials. Probably the one that most have heard about in recent times has been a larger phase 2 clinical trial in which we're testing a vaccine in a subgroup of breast cancer patients, those with triple negative breast cancer. And we're developing this vaccine. We've already taken it through phase 1 clinical trials and are moving on to what's called a phase 2 clinical trial. And we're going to actually get to really the heart of whether or not this vaccine works by testing whether or not it can prevent recurrence in these individuals.
How can women be part of, is it possible to apply to join the clinical trial here in our area?
It is. So we have, you know, call the Mayo Clinic and they can route you to an individual that can take down information and provide you with some of the key elements of what this trial is and eligibility, and they'll put you on a list. And once the trial is open, we'll be able to sort through those individuals to see who meet the qualifications for entry into the trial.
1 in 8 women, Donna, will develop breast cancer in their lifetime. Incidence rates, though, began decreasing in the year 2000. One theory has to do with the reduced use of hormone replacement therapy. That's one piece of this. But just being a woman and just getting older are risk factors,
well,
unfortunately.
That's true. The older you get, the higher your risk is. When you hear Dr. Knutson talk about the triple negative cancer, now that's the type that I had, but that's often one that strikes young women and very often is related to genetic cancers. But you're right, Melissa. The older you get, the more likely you are to get any type of cancer. But one of the nice things about being able to direct a therapy that actually instructs the immune system, or actually unmasks the immune system, is so exciting for the future of this, because it's a completely different approach. And, you know, you've always heard me talk about the atomic bomb on the anthill. I hope we get to the point where we're not just bombing people's bodies with chemo,
right,
in order to hope that one cell doesn't get away. If we can get the immune system to recognize cancer, then that's a much less toxic approach to this.
Yeah. And Dr. Knutson, how close are we, do you think, to that kind of breakthrough? It would just be a real game changer for the treatment of this disease and other types of cancers, I would think, too.
Well, you know, certainly over the past decade, we've seen a revolution in how we use the immune system. In other cancers, it's quite clear that if we activate the immune system, we can lead to complete cures in other types of cancers where, patients were, you know, given a death sentence and they've been cured long term. And so what we're interested in doing is applying these concepts now to breast cancer. And, you know, we hope that within the next decade or so, through, you know, rigorous, you know, experimentation and rigorous clinical trials, that we're able to, you know, rapidly get at the question as to which of the vaccines would be appropriate for which individuals with breast cancer. So it is a long-term process, but we're very hopeful that we have enough knowledge now and the knowledge that we'll be getting over the next, you know, decade or so, that we'll be able to apply these clinically to patients with breast cancer.
So exciting. And in the meantime, less than a month until the 10th anniversary of the 26.2 with Donna, Is the website still breastcancermarathon.com?
It is. We're still looking for volunteers, Melissa. Even if you're not a runner, you know, we need more than 2,000 volunteers for this race. So go to breastcancermarathon.com. You can find any distance that you like that suits you if you are a runner or a walker. And if not, we'd love to have you as a volunteer just to be a part of this.
Yeah. Any changes in the route this year?
Well, we're off the beach again this year.
Off the beach.
If you're a person that doesn't like to run on the beach, we are off the beach. And we'd love for you to just come out and cheer. We have great curb crew opportunities for people to just, you know, we were listed by CNN as one of 12 U.S. marathons worth the trip. And one of the reasons was because of our wonderful crowds that we have out on the course. So come on out and cheer people on. They love that. They're raising money for a fantastic cause.
It's coming up February 12th. So great to see you both. Donna Deegan, register now for the 26.2 with Donna at breastcancermarathon.com. And Dr. Keith. I can't win today. Dr. Keith Knutson, an immunologist and breast cancer researcher at Mayo Clinic.
It's been a long day already, Melissa. You've had a lot to do.
It's not even 10 a.m. yet. What can I say? It's a Monday. Anyway, thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you so much.
In a moment, Culpepper, as he gives his Super Bowl prediction. That's next.
This week, the Association to Preserve the Eatonville Community has been presenting the 28th Annual Zora Neale Hurston Festival of the Arts and Humanities. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll look at the life and career of the festival's namesake. We'll talk about the biography of Captain Joseph Fry and Jim Crow Railroad cars. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
We play all your favorite oldies every Monday night at 10. Join us for Route 66. Tune in, flashback, 89.9 WJCT-FM, Monday nights at 10.
I'm Joshua Johnson on the next 1A, the Syrian peace process, with America on the sidelines. The five-year conflict has killed about 300,000 people and displaced 11 million. Could the end be in sight? And is letting President Assad retain power a price worth paying? How things might turn around in Syria, next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Hello, I'm Stan Cleland, Vice President of Communications for WJCT Public Broadcasting. Here's wishing a very happy new year to you and all the great moments we have to look forward to in 2017. For nearly 60 years, WJCT has been an indispensable resource for the First Coast community. No matter what 2017 brings, WJCT will be here to share it all, from scientific developments, global, national, and local news, to in-depth documentaries and groundbreaking performances. Keeping you connected to the things that matter most to you. You know you can count on WJCT. Please be sure that WJCT can also count on you to help keep us financially strong in the year to come. Make your donation online today at WJCT.org. And thank you.
Presenting Next Avenue, a website from WJCT created specifically for adults discovering life after 50. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue.
Sponsored in part by AARP. Real possibilities.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, it's Super Bowl 51 this Sunday in Houston.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
The New England Patriots play the Atlantic Falcons, of course, and Cole Pepper joins us now with his Super Bowl prediction. Hey, Cole, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. I'll get to my prediction in just a moment, but first let's talk about the significant storylines for this game. First and foremost, certainly, is the chance for history to be made. Tom Brady, the Patriots quarterback, and Patriots coach Bill Belichick are going for 5 Super Bowl championships. No other coach and quarterback duo has ever accomplished that. Vince Lombardi and Bart Starr won 5 titles, but 3 of them were in the pre-Super Bowl era. So a chance for Brady and Belichick to do what nobody has done in the last 50 years in the National Football League. Also, the other quarterback, certainly there's some interest here. Atlanta quarterback Matt Ryan is trying to establish himself in the next tier of NFL quarterbacks. You'd put Brady and Aaron Rodgers of Green Bay, Ben Roethlisberger of Pittsburgh, and probably Drew Brees in the top tier. Then after that, you have guys like Eli Manning and Joe Flacco and Cam Newton, who have all won Super Bowls, or in Manning's case, 2. Ryan's body of work deserves to be included in the conversation with those guys, but unlike all those other quarterbacks I mentioned, Ryan's resume is without a Super Bowl title. They'll be trying to change that on Sunday. All right, now for my pick. The Patriots have been installed as a 3-point favorite in this one, and I think that while the Falcons have a slight edge in talent overall from top to bottom on the roster, it matters that Brady and Belichick have done this before. 6 times before, in fact. So I'm taking the Patriots, and I think this is a game that could get away from the Falcons if New England gets it going early. I'll take Patriots 31, Falcons 20.
All right, that's the official Culpepper pick. Pretty boring, I might add. Another Super Bowl ring for Tom Brady. Now, as important as the game is, it pales in comparison to the importance of all those Super Bowl parties. Cole, you're a well-known barbecue guy. What are you bringing to your Super Bowl bash?
Well, once I sift through all of these Super Bowl party invitations that I'm sure will become flooding in any time now, I'll probably just go with the traditional favorite, which is man dip.
Yes, your famous man dip. We may have to repost this recipe on our website this week. What is in the man dip?
Sure. Yeah, man dip is a cream cheese-based dip that includes 2 types of sausage, chopped tomatoes, peppers, and served with a healthy portion of love, and is best served with scoop-shaped tortilla chips and a fine scotch.
Oh, okay. That sounds pretty good. We'll have to post that on WJCTnews.org. And then quickly, a local high school football player represented the U.S. this weekend as well.
Yeah, that's right. Bulls quarterback Mac Jones led the USA under-19 team to a 33-11 victory over Canada at the inaugural North American Championships on Saturday in Orlando. Jones will be going to Alabama in the fall, and he certainly capped off his high school career in style. 2 touchdown runs in the game for the United States.
Kudos to him. Congratulations to Mac Jones. Also, follow Cole on Twitter at Culpepper and subscribe to the Sam and Cole podcast. All the sports news you need on iTunes or Stitcher. Thank you, Cole. Well, that's our show today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes or through the WJCT app. Next on 1A, a look at whether 2017 will mark the beginning of the end of the conflict in Syria. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again tomorrow at 9 a.m. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.